Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership. We unlock the power of organizations and teams to overcome tough challenges, seize new opportunities, and turn bold ideas into real-world results through strategic planning, retreats, and team workshops. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Sometimes once is not enough when you have people that are making big moves and doing amazing work in our community. Today, we have one of those guests, Louis Nguyen. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
A year ago, we had Louis on the podcast. At that time, he was the Chief Investment Officer for Mission Driven Finance. About 10 months ago, Louis made a big move and is now the CEO of Say San Diego. Say San Diego's mission is to partner with youth, adults, families, and communities to reach their full potential. Today, we'll learn about Say San Diego, but do a deep dive on making change, working in the community, and driving collaboration. Sound like a plan?
Sounds like a plan. I can't believe it's been a year.
I know. Time flies.
It does indeed.
You've been after me for a while though, to get this thing done. So. I love that. So tell us about Say San Diego. Give us the picture of what you guys do over there.
Absolutely.
When I say over there, you're right next door here to the BBB.
Right next
so
door.
How was the commute?
Say San Diego's been around since 1971. It started with one employee. It now has 500 staff members. We are probably top 25, top 30 nonprofit in the county. We operate across three departments, for lack of a better term. The first is after-school programs, where we work with 4,000 children in our elementary schools across 40 school sites with the school district.
That's all here in San Diego County.
On the county, after-school programs where, you know, it allows parents to work, allows them to feel safe knowing that their kids are being taken care of by trained staff. We've been doing this for a very long time. We're probably top one, two in the county in terms of care that we provide. The other unit is behavioral health. We're at 26 school sites where we work with young people who are just facing issues, mental health issues. And last year, we worked with some 400 young people from elementary schools to high schools. And these are direct care, one-on-one with one of our nine therapists who are on our staff. We work with young mothers. We work with fathers who want to become better parents. We have a number of programs. We have Dad's Corp. It's a program to work with fathers. We have First Five, which is a program working with young mothers who are really, we work from prenatal before they give birth until the child turns three. It's a very, very powerful program. And then lastly, our third department, we work what I call system level work, where we work with the community to give them voice. We work with the community to show them how to advocate for themselves. We also do...
So you say community, this is sort of like a region, a neighborhood or
City
something?
City Heights is one of the main area that okay. We do a lot of the system level work, but there are other communities that we do work in. And then lastly, alcohol, tobacco prevention programs as it relates to better education around the impact of alcohol and tobacco, and also giving voice for the community in research so that when policymakers are looking at making decisions on ordinance and laws, that there's research that has voice and informed by the community. So on an annual basis, we probably positively impact some 50,000 San Diegans. Wow. I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed to be in this position. The prior leadership, prior CEO, and the leadership team have just done a bang-up job.
You just slipped in, nothing to do?
Yeah. It is relative to what I'm hearing from other nonprofits. I'm in a very privileged position. We certainly have changes to make, and there are initiatives that we can undertake that can increase the efficiency and ability to provide impact for the community. But relative to other organizations, we're very blessed. We have zero debt. We have an okay reserve level. We are asset light. We don't own any of our buildings. So our assets and cash flows are designed to optimize speed and efficiency.
I guess most of your workforce is remote, or working on site, that kind of thing?
That's right. And so we have one location in View Ridge next door to here, and then we have another location in City Heights. But to your point, our young people who are working with the students are at the school sites. We have our therapists are out and about in the homes with the community. And so we are... So
that was your model before it became a model.
Yeah. So it's interesting. In the 10 months that I've been here, actually it's more like nine, when I was at Mission Driven Finance deploying debt to nonprofits, I had thought it makes sense for nonprofits to own assets because it's easier for me as a private credit investor.
Got a way of getting your money back.
That's right. I have collateral. But now that I'm on this side of the fence, I realize the provision of services to the community, it's all about a cash flow. It's all about cash flow, and it's a cash flow game. And so the more cash flow you can generate, the more impact we can create.
Right. It's really about getting it out to the community.
That's right. Yeah. So like a Somali mother of three, does she care if I have equity in my buildings? Does she care if I have a number of buildings on my balance sheet, right? Our community, what I call the side streets of America, right? We got Wall Street, we have Main Street, and really where we operate in is the side streets of America. And those individuals, amazing individuals who rely on us to bring a certain level of impact and care to them.
So would you say that's more like employees and small business owners?
That's right. And then you also have young people who are in need of the services that we provide, families from low-income communities who are looking to navigate the very difficult and complex system in the county to get to servicing. Like we have people to do that. Right. But it's, again, it's a cash flow game.
So I find this interesting, you know, as the business money guy, right? How you took on this new job and I was like, oh, wait a minute.
That's right.
A new way of looking at this thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So from the outside looking in as a creditor, I'm like, yes, I want to see a lot of equity and a lot of assets on their balance sheet so I can lend to that. And when I show up, I'm like, wait, if our North Star is to bring impact and services to the community, does it make sense to lock up $20 million in a building? Or should that $20 million be invested in businesses that generate cash flows that I can then hire people to go do really amazing work in the community? Certainly there are scenarios where owning a building in a community makes a lot of sense, right? For the community, because if we don't buy it, maybe a developer or someone from Wall Street might buy it. So that's a different...
You want it for community use.
Yeah, that's a different conversation. But all that's to say is, as I'm looking at SAY and being sort of very blessed in where we are, you know, we have the staff to do the work that we have, a pretty strong financial situation. It could be stronger. And there are just a number of ideas that are really exciting. Love to share it. Where we are looking to really take a quantum leap in terms of our ability to provide care for the community.
Oh, we do want to talk about that. So you're sitting here talking, reminds me of one of my wife's complaints, who runs a small nonprofit at PB. And so when you go over to the county or the city and say, oh, you know, I want to go after this $1 million grant, you have to go actually do all the work and then you get the money. So that's why the big guys, the Father Joe's, Alpha Projects, they get all the grants, is because they're the only ones who got enough bank and size to be able to do that.
That's right.
Because of the cash flow problem.
Yeah.
A small local nonprofit can't, you know, sit on, where are you going to sit on $1 million, right?
That's right.
How do you pay everybody to do what you got to do? So yeah, problems with that model.
Yeah. So the traditional model is you have a funding source. That funding source provides grants, contract to a nonprofit. That nonprofit then provides care and servicing to the community. That funding source gets cut. The nonprofit reduces headcount and reduces the servicing, and the community just gets whipsawed around. Today they have servicing, tomorrow they don't.
Right.
Where I would love to take, say, San Diego, it's probably 5 years out, is for us to have our own capital, so unrestricted, so we act as a buffer, so that if funding gets cut and we're like, we believe so much in this program and we believe that there is a prudent business as well as programmatic as well as community reasons to continue it, we could have from our reserve bankroll that on our own. And so at which time the funding comes back and now the community isn't getting whipsawed around.
Right.
Right. And so that's where I would love for us to get to. for us to get there, we need to have different sources of unrestricted capital generators where they're like, you know, here's a social enterprise over here, here's a social enterprise over there. And it's constantly just generating cash flow and unrestricted capital and reinvestment capital that goes into this buffer fund so that in this time, day and age, where on a whimsical decision from DC, fundings get cut and now our community is getting whipsawed back and forth.
You know, my wife did a short stint at the Workforce Partners. That's kind of their dealy, right? They get the government, whatever, and then they go execute.
Yeah.
And my wife said, people are just coming and going all the time because projects are coming and going.
That's right.
So you even got this turnover within the nonprofit all the time because when the project goes away, so goes the people. So.
And so goes the knowledge and institutional knowledge. Yeah.
Yep. I love the social enterprise idea, right? It's like, you know, how do we turn this thing into a for-profit sort of mindset, right?
That's right.
Can we actually generate services? So I think, you know, I'm one of the guys that runs the social enterprise for Shoreline. So, you know, we got a small team of homeless folks that we go out and we do projects. We do it for the business community in Mission Beach and Pacific Beach. And so part of my joining was to break even because we were losing money before. So we actually have gotten to break even, Louis. So I'm happy to say that. Now we got to get that place where we're actually making some money and help fund the other side. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It's a good model. Great way to go.
So we have two social enterprises now at Say San Diego. One is our after school programs where of those 4,000 kids, some of them are paid for by the state. And then some of the kids, their parents are paying. And so in the instances where the parents are paying, it's a business. Parents write us a check. We provide a service. We earn a spread on it. And
there's a huge need.
It's a huge need. And then the other social enterprise we have now is our early childcare. So 0 to 4 year old, as you know, at our facility, you might hear him from over here.
Heard him in the parking lot on my way in.
Such a sound of joy, but 24 seats, 12 from 0 to 2 and then 12, 3 to 4. Parents come in, you know, write us a check on a monthly basis. We take care of their wonderful children. So we have another facility in Scripps Ranch, and we have a couple more in the pipeline that we're working with affordable housing players to insert our childcare in their ground floor. So that's another area of need. So those are two existing social enterprises. We have one, a nascent.
Are you looking to grow those then?
Yes. So that is the idea. And we also have a nascent summer camp sort of where during spring break, during Thanksgiving, where parents still need kids to be sort of watched over and cared for. We have these camps that we're now introducing and growing and exploring, increasing our footprint.
It's like going off to some ranch and doing those kinds of activities?
Not necessarily. It's at the school site, maybe at a park. Yeah. And, you know, 3-4 hours a day type of offering. And then when we look around at other sort of businesses that we could joint venture with, we're leaning on the fact that we have these young people that we take care of every day. How else can we sort of increase the value? So for example, we're talking to San Diego FC, the soccer team.
Okay.
Where we collaborate with them on a venture to provide soccer training for our young people. And so acknowledging that we have capacity to grow what we can do with social enterprises for young people, and but doing it in a way that is value added to the parents, to the kids, to the community, because we're not here to maximize profit. We're here to make sure that there is a combination of profit and impact in what we bring to the community.
Right. Back to the mission statement, right?
That's right.
Say San Diego's mission is to partner with youth, adults, families, and communities to reach their full potential. I love
that's
that.
That's right.
All right. Love that. So let's talk about you as the CEO.
Man, sure.
500 people. I can't even imagine, dude.
Yeah.
I got 6 right now I'm trying to manage. It's like
still learning their names. Wonderful, wonderful.
Maybe talk a little bit, just kind of, I always like to do a little educational piece. So how did you show up, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, guess what? We got a new CEO, big new boss in town, new sheriff, right? Everybody's going, oh, what's this mean, right?
Yeah.
So how did you show up?
Well, it's an interesting question. I showed up at a time where the world was changing very, very quickly. So
10 months ago now,
10
right?
months so ago.
I don't remember what was happening 10 months ago.
So my first meeting.
We had another new sheriff in town.
That's right. My first meeting, February 1st, was about our cash situation and trying to understand what the federal cuts were going to do to our market, to our operation. And so partially showing up as fighting fire, partially showing up to introduce expansion plans and social enterprise concepts, and also showing up humbly in that I am not a nonprofit person. This is my first nonprofit gig. I'm very open to that. And I'm here to learn and ask questions, sort of test conventional wisdom as to whether we should continue to do X, Y, and Z, right? And but also being open to my mind frame being changed. I share with you sort of the asset light model that I've come to embrace. And so in the first couple of months, I was just listening to what's being said, but how it's being said. And with 500 people.
You say how it's being said, what do you mean?
Well, I think, you know, people communicate in various ways, not only just the words and the sentiment, but I think it's the passion, the hesitation, the anxiety.
See what the comfort level is.
That's right. Yeah. And so, you know, with 500 people, many of our staff members don't often get time with me, and I'm trying to create sort of a more direct connectivity with them. And then...
Curious to hear about that too.
Yeah. And I think buried in all of that are a lot of creativities and a lot of ideas. And then many of our, because we work at 40 school sites with the immigration activities, immigration enforcement activities, it's creating stress and anxiety for our students, which then sort of gets carried over to our staff members. Yes. And, you know, learning all of that as I come in as a CEO of a, you know, very proud organization that's done just amazing work. And I'm lucky in that I show up, and this is an organization, it's not a turnaround story. It's not a house on fire story. It's a very proud, well-run organization with great people doing intense, impactful work. How to keep all that, how to grow it, and how do we think about taking risks? And I think that is another...
You raising the bar a bit in that space? Is that kind of a little bit of...
Yeah, so I think it's an interest. It's a really broad conversation, Jeff, in that risk-taking for someone like me who come from an investment background, who, you know, pull the trigger on a $10 million deal and we end up losing a couple of million, it's you're okay because you've
it's
done...
It's another Tuesday.
Yeah, you've done the homework. But risk-taking is very different for those who've grown up in the nonprofit space. And so it doesn't land as it would normally land when I use the word risk-taking with nonprofit individuals and executives. Nothing sort of deficient about that. It's just sort of the environment yeah. and ease and comfort with the term and idea and leading people, not necessarily leading, but sort of sharing that, here's how we mitigate risk, and we cannot completely mitigate risk, and we are here to take risk for our community. I mean, like, we are privileged to take risk.
That's a way of framing it right there.
Yeah.
We're taking risk for the community.
We are
not here to try taking risk to try and somehow build some big empire over here.
Where that's right.
Everything we're doing is for the community.
We are essentially...
That's the advantage of running a business like yours, a nonprofit, right? There's always that mission you can always lean back on.
Yeah. I mean, like, think of it like if we were hunters and gatherers and we're going out there to bring back resources to the community and we got to, you know, climb a cliff to get some sort of very important herbs, nutritious herbs for the community. And it's dangerous, but we have to take that risk because we've been privileged and we are in a position to do that, to take that kind of risk. But I just want to be super clear that it's not as if the nonprofit executives haven't taken risks in the past. It's a different type of risk that they've taken in the past, right? And taking, and for us to think about how do we take financial risks? How do we take reputation risks? How do we prudently, right? Not haphazardly. And it's been a real journey for both myself and our staff to think about what that looks like and how to communicate that and how we get comfortable around taking risks. And I think generally on a larger scale for our whole industry is to encourage the whole ecosystem to take risks. And, you know, to your point earlier about larger organizations that oftentimes get all the most of the contracts, they're the one also in a position to take the type of risk necessary for our community. They should do it. And that is part of what I am working on, not just internally at, say, San Diego, but outside in the community as well.
So words in that as well. So, yeah.
It's to nudge other CEOs and foundations to say, this is where we should be taking risks for our community.
You got an opportunity right now.
Yes, yes. There's a real deep urgency, right? Like, we don't know how, we got probably 3-4 more years of this, if not more, and it could go even further south.
Right. So the economy starts to go a little more sideways, which yes. seems like there's some stress in our economy. I know I'm nervous. That's really going to put a big stress on all these things.
Yes. And so my first budget that I got approved by the board in June included a 10% raise across the board for all of our staff.
Oh, nice.
Does not include me.
I'm going to say, I love you, Louis.
And
it's a good first move.
Well, my thinking is we are in this economically distressed time. We have to take care of our people. Impact starts at home. Like, you cannot be drawing an artificial line between the clients we serve and then neglect our staff.
Which I think happens often in the nonprofit world.
Yeah. And I don't think it's intentional. I don't believe so. I just think that it's all about priorities, right?
There's a little bit of a mindset too.
Yeah.
We're on mission, right?
Yeah.
So I guess we're supposed to sacrifice them.
Yes,
here.
Yes.
And so, but it has its problems. You see a lot of young kids that get in and they burn out, or they get to 30, go, no, I raise a family and I can't afford this.
That's right.
And now you end up with people on the other end. They're like, okay, now that I've made my nut, you know, and between my vacations, I'll come over and volunteer, right?
Yeah.
So and yeah, it's a bad business model.
And you have young people leaving, and again, you lose all that creativity, yep. you lose all that risk-taking, you lose all that institutional knowledge. So not only did we give everyone a raise, like a 10% raise, but we're also bringing joy and fun to our staff. So it, as with any CEO, I get offered to go watch the Padres, you know, the tickets to the symphony, tickets to galas. 9 times out of 10, we actually make those tickets available to our staff as a lottery. You know, these are for 2 tickets, you're looking at 200, 250 of an evening, you know, and it's meaningful. And people put their name in this online lottery system that our team has set up, and everyone locks on.
So that kind of goes out to the whole gang.
Yeah. It's and then nice. They see the spin, they see the wheel spinning.
Okay,
and
this is cool.
Yeah, like they see the wheel spinning and they see, you know, whose name gets chosen. And
how fun.
And so, yeah, I think a little bit of a tangent, something that I also focus on is joy. In this time, day and age of what's happening in the world, you just have one exogenous shock after another exogenous shock. Joy is so crucial for us to...
Like it's been sucked out of the room.
It is. And I ask our staff, what are we doing to bring joy to our community? And what are we doing to bring joy to ourselves? And how do we remind ourselves of the joy that we create and do and make? And, you know, it's interesting. I was just looking at the hierarchy of needs and joy isn't on there. But neither is oxygen. But is it so fundamental?
It is fundamental, right?
Yeah.
You're a little kid that, you know, you got them over there running around right now. They're all joyful, right? They might cry for a moment, but it's back to joy in a nanosecond, right? So we got joy and somehow we lose that along the way. And now we're trying to find it through meaning and work and all these kinds of good things, right? But
I mean, it's, you know, the saying, you know, to retain the curiosity of a child. But I think beyond that is to retain the joy of a child, retain the openness and the risk-taking of a child. Like it's beyond just a curiosity. We should really expand that saying to be, like you say, one moment, be very, very upset and being very comfortable expressing.
Yes, exactly. That's part of it right there.
Yeah.
Express your emotions.
Yeah. Like I just stubbed my toes. That really hurt. I'm just going to have a good old cry. And then be like, oh, that looks kind of fun over there. What are y'all doing? I'm going to go over there and hang out with you guys.
Yeah,
and
quickly just forgot.
Yeah.
And the next thing.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think with Say San Diego, bringing this, reminding ourselves, we're doing amazing work. We're doing God's work. We're doing work for the community. But that doesn't mean we need to be joyless. Doesn't mean we need to be working underpaid. Like, so I'm trying to change that mindset and change the framework for us to be able to pay our people better. We're going to continue, knock on wood, God willing, we're going to have another raise next year. We're going to continue to take risks. Not all. I tell my board, I said, here are the 10 ideas that we have cooking. They're all, you know, they're like, oh, this is great. This is exciting. I'm like, just to remind you, this is the nature of investing. 7 of these will blow up and three of them will do okay. And one of them might just like really take
off.
Game
changer, yeah.
Yeah. But just so you know, this is the nature of taking risks and it won't always hit.
That's where they hired you, Louis.
Well, that is the fun. And I'm, again, just feel very blessed to be in a position to be a part of Say's journey and being a part of rethinking how Say goes about its mission. And hopefully if we crush it, you know, it creates the pathway for others to follow.
So you're casting a vision. I mean, as a new CEO, I'm casting a vision of us taking some more risk and changing the communities we live in.
That's right. Emphasizing generating unrestricted capital for the purpose of sustainability, resiliency, so that we act as a buffer, so that our communities does not get whipsaw, and that we
can count on you.
Yes, that we're around. We're here. Again, that Corinne, mother of two, does she care about how my balance sheet looks? Does she care about my or like it's all about our impact and our cash flow and how we can use that to increase impact to the community.
So you said something that I went, oh, I'm interested. So how are you connecting with these 500 employees that you got? How do you do that? That's hard.
It is. It's hard on a number of levels. One is just time.
Right.
They're super busy. I'm busy.
And they don't want to connect with you.
Yeah. And there's also a generational issue, right? Like it's, I got boomers, Gen Z.
You gotta have everything. Yeah.
Millennials. And they communicate differently and they say things differently.
Which goes back to all probably define joy a little differently too.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Because how I find joy is very different from how they find joy.
Exactly.
So I do keep an open door policy. Anyone can grab time on my calendar to come in and say hello. So that's available. We have some really amazing leadership training programs internally at Say San Diego. So I've made my time available to show up and share my journey and my thinking. But we could do better. I think they're, you know, exploring other ways and more connectivity because, you know, they are our frontline people. They are the ones who, beyond the numbers that I see, they provide the stories behind it and the impact that we're creating in the community.
So we talked about this a little bit before. Now you're in a new role. So our community of San Diego, like the larger thing. What's your vision? What could we be doing here?
In the nonprofit space.
As a community,
yeah.
Everybody together, for-profit, nonprofit, what could we be creating in this community that would make San Diego be the beacon on the hill, right? This, we should all look like San Diego.
Yeah, that's a question a lot of really smart people in town have really been struggling with. You know, I think one of the amazing things about the Cause Conference, it's designed specifically to bring for-profit people with government people, with the nonprofit space, so that conversations can happen, ideas can be kicked around. And I think it goes back to, for me, risk-taking. We're very comfortable in the lane that we have been operating in for a long time. And to jump lanes, to break down the barriers between lanes, that's a little intimidating. And it's a little scary. And so I think one of the first things is, how do we think about breaking down those lanes and breaking down those silos that are, quite honestly, artificial? And
then, what's the biggest one you'd go after? You know, kind of 80-20 rule. You know, if you could fix that one, you know, a lot of things would come with it. Where would you put your effort? Because I'm all about the idea of collaboration. I think that's what's missing. That's kind of my gig in life. It's like, okay, where can I go play where I actually can make a difference? Bringing some collaboration tools.
So on a micro level, I have community room that holds probably 80 people comfortably. And it sits empty. Mm. Lots of time. And so wouldn't it be wonderful if there was a way for another organization who needs to use a community room and they reach out to us and we're like, oh yeah.
Right. So you got an asset. Right?
Asset underutilized, right? So now how do we optimize the usage of the assets?
Like that.
The other is, I have a van sitting in my parking lot. It has not moved, what I've been told, for like 6 years. It's just something broke. And evidently it's more expensive to get it repaired than it is to just get a new one. We don't currently have the capital to buy a new van, which then started me thinking, there must be other organizations who have vans sitting around in the same way that I have a community room sitting around that isn't being fully used. Like I could, you know, go and buy a van, or maybe I'm van sharing with other organizations. And then, so you bring this up, I bring this up, and the pushbacks are, well, there's insurance issues and then there's like liability issues. Sure, there are all these issues, but they're not, they shouldn't be showstoppers, right? Like we should sit down and engage and say, hey, who, and I try to bring this up wherever, whenever I'm at an event, I'm like, I have a community room. If you need to use it, please let us know. Well, that's, again, risk-taking, right? And so I think that's the super low-hanging fruit. And I think a part of it is really driven by engaged board members and thoughtful board members who are supportive of the CEO or maybe nudging the CEO to be like, hey, how do we collaborate? And I think the other one is, I think this is, we talked about this at the last podcast, you and I, of corporations playing bigger roles.
Right.
And not just with their checkbooks, but like leadership in their supporting our risk taking, right? And so our bank is Torrey Pines, now Western Alliance. And they have been Say's bank for, I want to say, a couple of decades, I've been told. And so one of the initiatives we're looking at launching at Say is to provide 1,000 free therapy sessions to young students in our school system and their parents. So we're launching that initiative right now. It's called the Wellspring Initiative. And we have 9 therapists. And so we have all the ingredients. We have the therapists. We have the therapy rooms. We have young people who we are already working with at the school. There's an enormous amount of mental health need. And so the missing ingredient, literally the only thing, is how do we pay for our therapists who are already somewhat underpaid to be able to provide the care, because everything else is already there. And Western Alliance have been, you know, still early in the conversation, but I'm hoping to bring them in to be helping us spearhead that.
Nice.
And being an early risk taker of that. We already got commitment from the Irvine Foundation to support, the Wellness Foundation to support, working on the California Healthcare Foundation to support, working on the California Endowment to support it. And so I've done my bit in getting the nonprofit capital sources to support. And now I come to the business players in our bank and be like, look, this would be really amazing for you to support. It's a very innovative concept that we're putting together. It's a bit risky.
The one of the 10.
That's right.
Might work, might not work.
That's right. And if we're not here to take risks for our community, then what are we doing? Right. What are we doing?
Because we want to fix something. We're just running around putting Band-Aids.
That's right.
That's not getting us anywhere.
Yeah. And so I think sort of this larger collaboration, and collaboration one is about sharing assets. The other is sharing risks, right? And taking risks. But, you know, I get it. People,
you need the right people together to have that conversation, right? That's right. The challenge.
Well, it's in classic economic term, it's the principal agency conflict. The people making the decision are not the people who own the capital. So if the principal and the agent are the same person and they're deciding for themselves because it's their money, it's a very different conversation. It's when you have the principal, the people who own the money, they're different from the people who are making the decision. And the agent has lots of concerns. Job security. Am I making the right decision? Is this going to increase my reputation? Is it going to, you know, raise my profile? All very rational. Like nothing wrong with all that. But it does create a little bit of pushing on the string sometimes. And so when we talk about collaboration, particularly with businesses, particularly with large businesses where you have decision makers who are not the owners of the assets, you're really referring to, we're really talking about how do we get those agents to engage in taking more risks? It's not the business. The business, they're kind of agnostic. They're really leaving it to the agents to make the decisions. So back to your larger question of what do I see for the community as a whole? A lot more collaboration, a lot more risk taking. And this is a really fertile ground to do it. And you're starting to see some really interesting stuff happening. You know, the Unity Fund that was launched by the Prebys Foundation and the Price Foundation and the San Diego Foundation. That's really innovative.
And great to see some of those organizations coming together and collaborating to make some things happen. I love
that. Super exciting.
Yes.
I think it'd be really interesting to get some organizations together and say, how do we create joy? How do we intentionally, there's the stuff that we do to get food to the needs.
Solving problems.
Yes, but there's that.
But then I have to have a vision of something. Joy. Yes. Yeah, sounds like a good one to me, Louis.
Yes. And so at Say San Diego, here's my business talk. In our portfolio of services, it goes from direct services, childcare, direct after school program, behavioral health support, to system level work, right? Like, how do we help advocate for certain ordinance and laws? How do we provide power building to the community? And I would say creating joy is one of these things that covers the whole spectrum, super powerful. And honestly, creating joy is an act of resistance. It's like, if we are the source of joy for the community, come what may, we're going to figure it out because we own that joy.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of back again. The idea of joy is, you know, you're coming from a place that you're not stressed out, whacked out, or whatever. You actually have creativity. You have all the things that come with joy. Yeah.
So you know, it's interesting as we're talking about it, there's social determinants of health, like all these social elements and factors that contributes to health, physical health, mental health. I'm wondering if social determinants of joy is a thing, and it's a thing that's worth digging into.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
I have to say that I've been studying Hinduism for the last year and a half, 2 years. Oh. That's the core. The whole thing is, that's the goal, is joy.
Is that right?
Yep. Yep. That's it.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
You're onto it, brother.
I'm Catholic, but I minored in religious studies in college.
Oh, nice.
And that was a class I didn't do so well, Hindu studies.
I'm not sure I'm doing that well either. We got to put a bow on this, Louis. Hey. What's the one big thing you want people to know and remember?
Say San Diego is a
company of joy.
A company of joy, taking risks for our community because that's what we are privileged to do. And if we're not taking risks for our community, then what are we doing? I would like for the listeners and audience to remember Say as an innovative organization, impact at its heart, joy as its aura, and doing good stuff.
Love that. Well, it's great catching up with you again here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I love this, the for-profit guy moving over to the nonprofit side and saying, hey, you know, how do we go make this thing happen over here? Build some social enterprises.
I love it.
And make some things happen and bring joy to our community.
Yes.
Thank you, Louis. Love it. So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego, who are all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jail Break Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best. We're all counting on you.